Bichida. That he lived in Livorno the last 30 years of his life, was known as a very humble individual. He wrote many, many svarim. They think it may be 83 svarim. He lived to the age of 83. I think it may be either very close to 83 or maybe even 83 svarim. And they're not baby svarim. Each sefer is a whole sefer, an independent unit. One of the svarim that he wrote is a collection of tshuvas, and it's entitled Chaim Sho'al. His name is Chaim, Chaim Yosef David. So he writes, it's Chaim Sho'al, it's not Chaim Heshiv. Chaim is asking the questions and giving a suggestion. He's not sure whether his answers are correct. He's just, his tshuvas are shilas. It's not tshuvas. Like the Yismach Moshe has a collection of tshuvas that's called Heshiv Moshe. Moshe answers. He says it's Chaim Sho'al. He's asking the shilas. He's known as a humble person. He has very fascinating topics. He's always very, he has very chikavit topics, very believe it or not things that he quotes. I remember when I was very young, I used to study different svarim by the Chidah. He has a separate sefer on Megillas Rus that's entitled Simchas HaRegel. So he discusses the following issue, very fascinating topic. What's the din if the rabbis come up with a new Chiddush today? The Tanoim, the Amoraim, Rabbi Feinstein, whatever, someone comes up with a new din. Until today, it was always assumed otherwise, and today the rabbis are mechadish this din, and they think that this din is a biblical din, a din d'araisa. Should we assume that this was always the din since Maimon Har Sinai? And all of the earlier generations, they were simply, if they weren't observing the din the way we just developed it now, they were simply mistaken. They were just in violation of the correct observance of the din. Should we say no? That if the rabbis are mechadesh a new din based on Midrash HaTorah and Reshes Bam, so this new din only applies from now on. Up until now, the din was the other way. And from now on, we were mechadesh a din, the din only applies today. So he shows that this is a dispute among the commentaries on the Gemara. This is a machlekes among the Achrayim. And it's known that the Chazon Ish thought the second way. When a Beis Din is mechadish a new din d'oraisa, it only becomes binding mikan l'haba. Up until now, the din was not so. And from now on, the din is so. The Talmud states that for the period of 410 years that the first Beis HaMikdash was standing, they used to observe the mitzvah of Nisach HaYayin in one fashion. The mitzvah to pour the wine on the Mizbeach in conjunction with Akrovas HaKarbonis. And then 70 years later, after the Babylonian exile was over, they rebuilt the Beis HaMikdash, and in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Rabbanim at that time paskin differently. They decided to do the Nisach HaYayin differently. So the Sfasemis, in his commentary on the Gemara in Zvachim, raises the question, you mean to say that for all 410 years of the first Beis HaMikdash they did it wrong? That they never yotze the mitzvah of Nisach HaYayin properly? Because the correct way is to do it the way the Rabbanim said during the period of the second Beis HaMikdash. So the Sfasemis gives a teretz al pi Chassidus and al pi Kabbalah, which he usually does not do in his Sfarim HaGemara. His drashas and chumash are all Chassidus and Kabbalah. But it's far on the Gemara, straight Gemara. And here on this kasha, he gets involved. He couldn't krich out of this kasha. He gets involved in Kabbalah and Chassidus. But in the yeshivas, they say they don't see what the kasha is. During the period of the first Beis HaMikdash for 410 years, the Rabbanim paskin one way. So at that time, since that's the way they understood the pasuk, that was the correct way to perform the mitzvah of Nisach HaYayin. And then during the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Rabbanim decided otherwise. They have the right to reverse the psak. We don't always follow precedent. The Rabbanim in every generation, if they're entitled to an opinion. Sometimes the Rabbanim are not sufficiently learned that they should be entitled to an opinion, period. But if they are entitled to an opinion, then they're entitled to and obligated to give the honest to goodness opinion, even if it's in disagreement with those who preceded them, who are greater than them. The Talmud has a principle, the Mishnayos have a principle, that Ein Bezdin Yochel Levatel Dibri Bezdin Chavera, a later Bezdin has no right to repeal a rabbinic enactment that was made by an earlier Bezdin, unless the later Bezdin is greater b'chachma v'minyan, a greater number of scholars, and greater in knowledge, that they're more learned than the earlier Bezdin. So the Talmud Yerushalmi says, and Tosfos and the Rambam and the Rosh and all of the Rishonim quote this from the Talmud Yerushalmi, that that rule only applies, a later Bezdin cannot repeal the rabbinic enactment of an earlier Bezdin. That's only if they want to repeal a rabbinic enactment. But if they're each looking at the Pasuk and Chumash and they're disagreeing how to read the Pasuk, what is the din that the Chumash is trying to tell us? So the later Bezdin is entitled to their opinion, even if they're not at all greater than the earlier Bezdin, provided they're entitled to an opinion. That's, they have to be. Sometimes rabbis are not sufficiently learned that they should be entitled to an opinion. So that's what happened over here. During the 410 years of the first Beis HaMikdash, the Rabbanim understood the Pasuk and Chumash one way. So they practiced Nisach HaYayin the way they saw fit. Then in the later generation, when they built the second Beis HaMikdash, the Rabbanim at that time disagreed, and they read the Pasuk differently. And that was the Pesach in their generation. Doesn't mean that in the earlier generation it was wrong, no. That's Eilu V'Eilu Divrei Elokim Chai. Both perspectives on the Pasuk are acceptable. HaKadosh Baruch Hu leaves it up to the Chachmei HaTorah Shebechol Dor Bador, the Paskin, according to their perspective. All the perspectives are acceptable.
Yeah, it will be merged.
Whether it's proper to give smicha ordination to women. The chidah among the many, many svarim that he wrote, supposedly 83 svarim, one of the more famous svarim that he wrote is known as Shein HaGedolim. The first half of the sefer, he lists off in alphabetical order the names of all of the commentaries on the Gemara and the commentaries on the Shulchan Aruch, the names of all of the Rabbanim, Shem HaGedolim, the names of the Rabbanim. In the second half of the Sefer, he lists off in alphabetical order the names of the Svarim. In the first half of the Sefer, he only has men, he doesn't have any women. But under the letter Reish, he writes Rabbanis, a Rebbetzin. And he writes about the wife of one of the rabbis, Rabbi Shua Falk, who is the author of the Prisha. Prisha is a commentary on the bottom of the page of the Tur. And the same person is the author of the Sma, the Sefer Me'iras Inayim, which is a commentary on the Choshen Mishpat. So when the Prisha was published, after the author passed away, the son of the Sma wrote an introduction. So he writes what a holy tzaddik his father was, and then he also writes an introduction about his mother. That his mother was a big tzaddikah, she always encouraged the father to learn, and his mother, Mrs. Sma, Mrs. Falk, Bishua Falk, was a big melumedes, and she had original chidushim lipsak halacha. And he quotes two psakim of his mother. So the one psak is that on Shabbos, the practice is that the women first light the candles and then say the bracha after they light the candles. Because they're concerned about the chashash, if they'll say the bracha first, like you're supposed to normally do, say the bracha l'hadlik ner shel Shabbos. The say a bracha always before, immediately before you perform a mitzvah. So if you recite the bracha l'hadlik ner shel Shabbos, that may imply that they're accepting Shabbos already. So then they're not permitted to light the candles. So the mother is the mother of the right. In other words, the wife of the Sma came up with the chiddush that on Yontif this concern doesn't exist. So the women should recite the bracha l'hadlik ner shel Yontif before they light the candles. and then he has another chiddush from his mother. So the Magen Avraham is one of the standard commentaries on the side of the Shulchan Aruch, quotes this, that Mrs. Sma had this original chiddush about Lichtenstein, and then he writes a nasty comment. The Magen Avraham writes a nasty comment. Ein chachma leisha ela bepalach. The women should stick to knitting and stitching. They shouldn't issue any opinions on halachic matters. The women only know how to sew. They don't know how to paska. So the Chidor, Rabbi Azulai, writes, that's what the Magen Avraham says. But many of the later paskim agree with Rebbetzin Falk, and they think that she was right. So in the whole hullabaloo that was going on a few months ago, that whether it is proper or improper for Orthodox rabbi to give smicha to women, so they quoted, look, the Chidor in his book Shem HaGdolim writes all the people who had smicha, then he writes Rabbanus, that they're Rebbetzin, and she was entitled to her opinion, and the later Paskim agreed with her psak. So you see that the Chidor thinks that you can give smicha to women. Not that conclusive. Not so conclusive. Chidor quotes an earlier
in Shem HaGdolim, same volume,
book on history, who claims that the Rambam was in the practice of signing off his letters Moshe ben Maimon, the one who the Rambam lived in Egypt for much of his life, writes Moshe ben Maimon, he would sign off the one who violates three averis every day because he's living in Egypt. Because there are three psukim in the Torah in three different places where it says that we're not allowed to go back to live in Egypt. So the Chidor quotes this from an earlier source of history, and he writes, he finds it hard to believe. He says he doesn't have access to any handwritten letters, any originals by the Rambam. He finds it hard to believe that the Rambam would sign off that he's in violation of three averis every day. He had a brera to move out of Egypt. He wasn't tied down to the country. He thinks that obviously the Rambam assumed that he's not in violation of any averi by living in Egypt. The Chidor in that book, he was always searching for manuscripts. Whenever David mentioned before, the Chidor was always very eager to learn whatever there was to learn. He would always visit museums and zoos and look at Goyesha encyclopedias and visit the libraries. He was the one who copied over many lines from the Meiri centuries before the Meiris were published. He found these Meiris and other Svarim and Kisvei Yad in these libraries, the royal libraries and so on, and he would copy over whatever he found fascinating. So he writes in one place when he talks about the Rambam, he writes that he has a manuscript where it's written that the Rambam himself writes that there's a mitzvah for every Jewish man to write a Sefer Torah or to commission a Sefer to write a Sefer Torah, and the Sefer Torah you write has to be a kosher Sefer Torah. So the Rambam writes that he wrote his own Sefer Torah based on the Sefer Torah that was available to him at that time. And there are questions in certain places about the spelling of certain words and whether the paragraph is supposed to be a psucha or a stuma. So the Rambam writes that after a few years, he got a copy of a very reliable Sefer Torah, and he checked his Sefer Torah against the other one to make sure that there are no discrepancies. And he discovered the day that he checked, the day that he completed checking, happened to be Chof Ches Ir. By us, that's Yom Yerushalayim. Those who celebrate Yom Yerushalayim. So the Rambam writes that on Chof Ches Ir, he completed checking his Sefer Torah against this one that was most reliable. And he was so excited. The that his Sefer Torah was 100% authentic kosher l'mahadrin, men l'mahadrin, he celebrated that day as a yontif. And every consequent year, he would celebrate in commemoration of the fact that he ascertained that his Sefer Torah that he had written was 100% authentic kosher l'mahadrin with no errors. Early Kisra Yad that were not yet published. By now, almost all of them are available in print. But at the time that he was always quoting from manuscripts that were not available to the public. So in the Chumash, the Torah tells us that Yosef went down to Mitzrayim. He had two sons. He had Menashe and Ephraim. So Menashe's name was Kinashan Elikim is Kol Amoli Ves Beisavi. I forgot about my whole aggravation with my brothers. And the name Ephraim was Ki Ephrani Elikim Be'eretzon. Where Ephraim comes from the word Pru Revu, that he had children Be'eretzon Yi, in the country where he had aggravation. So the Chidor quotes from one of the Balei HaTosfos. Now it's all available in print. At the time that he published it, it was in manuscript. So he says the practice that developed in the later generations to name after an Elta Zeta, an ancestor, in order that we shouldn't forget our lineage, we should remember our heritage, what forefathers were, and follow in their ways. He claims that this began already with Yosef, that the name Ephraim is the plural of Efer, ashes. That Avram Avinu said, Onochi Ofer ve'Efer, I'm like ashes. And Yitzchak was brought on the Akedah, and the Medrash has an expression that Afra shel Yitzchak Tzovro Munach Agabi HaMizbeach. When Avram Avinu offered the Teleh, the young goat that was Nechaz Basrach Pekarnov, so the ashes of that goat that he burnt on the Mizbeach, Afri Shel Yitzchak, the ashes of the goat that were offered instead of Yitzchak, are sitting in front of the Mizbeach, in front of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and the Rabbanu Shalom always remembers the Schus of Akedas Yitzchak. So the Chidor quotes from one of the Balei HaTosfos that Yosef wanted to name his second son Menashe Ephraim. Ephraim was his second son. He wanted to name him after the Elta Zeide Avram and the Zeide Yitzchak. So instead of giving him a name Avram Yitzchak, so he called them Efer twice, Efer square, Ephraim. Efer al Shem Avram, that he was Anachi off of Efer, and Efer al Shem Yitzchak. The Chumash gives a different reason. Ki Ephrani, no, but this is the real reason. The real reason is Anamen Nachavram and Yitzchak, and that's the Medrash says that in the later generations, that was developed as a minhag that we should remember our ancestry. We should try to live up to the milas and the midas tavis that our ancestors developed.
In Venezia.
The problem was that the front door was automatically opening every time we would step up to it. So Rav Nachman arranged that when we waved to the receptionist, they would do the malacha for us and open the door. This leniency, this kula, sof kol sof, we're asking the non-Jew to do a malacha for us. So this kula is based on what it says in Shulchan Aruch, that whenever some activity is only forbidden in the Rabbanon on Shabbos, you're permitted to ask a Nochri to do that Malacha the Rabbanon for you, if there's a Mokam Mitzvah or a Mokam Tzorach Godel, if it's very important. So we wanted to go to Shul on Shabbos morning, we wanted to go to sleep on Friday night. go spatzering on Shabbos afternoon. So if you have a makam mitzvah or a makam tzarech gadol, so then we permit what we call shvus de shvus, but makam mitzvah, to ask a nachri to do a malacha derabbanan. What's the malacha derabbanan? So it's generally accepted today that using some electrical appliance, the use of electricity to cause something to start to function, is only midirabbanan. If you turn on an electric light, so you're eating the filament till it glows, so that's accepted today, that's assumed to be a malacha deraisa of havara. Havara is not only if you strike a match. Havara is if you have a fire that exists already and you throw some fuel in, or you heat metal till it glows. You don't have to dafka burn the fuel and consume it. The Rambam quotes a Tosefta that if you heat metal till it glows, that's a malacha deraisa of havara. So turning on an electric bulb, we assume, is a malacha deraisa. We would only permit Amira Lenachri, let's say we'll ask the Nachri to turn on the lights in Shul, that's a different heter. That heter is Amira Lenachri, but Makam Mitzvah Derabim. If you want to have the whole Tefillah B'Tzibur, that's a Mitzvah Derabim. But let's say to turn on a light, to ask the Nachri to turn on a light in the bathroom for a private individual, so that's problematic. That's Amira Lenachri on a Malacha Deraisa. Question is, a person has to go to the bathroom, so there's an issue of kavod habrias. Okay, so Amira Lenachri would be mutter in a situation of kavod habrias also. But if a person steps up to a automatically an electric eye doorway, and the electricity function that opens the door, so that we assume is only an issa derabbanan. If you use an electric reaper to harvest something, that's a malacha deraisa, not a malacha of using electricity. It's a malacha deraisa of harvesting things. If you use an electric machine to plant something, that's a malacha deraisa of planting. But if you use an electric fan or you use an electric refrigerator, so we assume the worst that could be is a malacha derabbanan. And with those who are of the opinion that whenever you complete a circuit and it causes something to function, this itself constitutes a malacha deraisa, but that's not the generally held opinion. So since we assume that even if I would open the door myself, that's controlled with the electric eye, that would only constitute an issa derabbanan. So to ask a nachri to do the malacha for me constitute, that's a shvus de shvus b'makam mitzvah b'makam tzara gadol, so that we permit. Then we realized on Friday also that there were sensors in the hallway, and as you walk in the hallway, it's a psik reisha, it's a vadoes that is going to cause lights to go on. And the lights that were going on were real malacha. That's already havara, lights going on. So usually we say that if a person is not really interested in doing some other activity, I'm walking in the halls, and as far as I'm concerned, I don't care whether the light goes on, the light doesn't go on. I'm minding my own business. But by walking in the halls, it's a vadoes that is going to turn the lights on. So that should really be considered a psik reisha. So then we should really prohibit walking in the halls. So Rav Nachman had them arrange to dismantle the system l'kavod Shabbos, and the sensors were not working on Shabbos. But we mentioned before Shabbos that if you really get stuck, strictly speaking, the halacha is that this is not considered a psik reisha. So I promised on Friday that I would explain what the source for this is, what the basis is. So there is a Mishnah in Masechta Shabbos. Shabbos is a very big Masechta. There are 24 prakim in Masechta Shabbos. Why did Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi choose to make 24 prakim, 24 chapters? He could have made 30 chapters. He could have made 20 chapters. 24 is a strange number. So the commentaries say, because Shabbos is referred to as a kala, we say boy kala, boy kala. We greet the Shabbos as a kala, and in the days of the Tanakh, we read in the Novi Yecheskel that the kala used to wear 24 pieces of jewelry. I don't know exactly where, 24 pieces of jewelry, earrings and nose rings and necklaces and toe rings and rings on the fingers, all together, bracelets, yeah, all together, used to add up to 24. So Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi arranged the Mishnayos in such a way that we have the 24 chapters on Masechah Shabbos are the 24 Tachshitim of Shabbos Hakala. So one of the later Prokim, one of the later chapters of Masechah Shabbos, the Mishnah has the laws of Tzedah. One is not permitted to trap a wild animal. If you have you're allowed to close, let's say if you have a domesticated animal, person has a kitten or a puppy at home, you don't say that by closing the door he's trapping the animal. It's a domesticated animal and it knows that it doesn't run away. But let's say if a wild animal runs into my apartment and I decide I want to trap this deer, I want to trap this bird, and I close the windows, close the doors in order to trap the animal, so that's a violation of Tzedah. That's one of the 39 malachas on Shabbos, one of 39 prohibited activities. You're not permitted to do tzedah. So the Mishnah has the following. Let's say there's a house, and a wild animal ran in, and some person sits by the door, blocking the whole doorway. A nochri sits down by the door to block the doorway, and maybe the animal cannot run out. It's not a bird. The bird can fly out even if someone is sitting by the door. But it's a deer, let's say. So the deer, whatever the animal is, it cannot run out because this fellow is sitting by the door. So I sit down next to him on another chair, and I carry on a conversation with him. So when I sit down, there's no problem. The animal is caught, the animal is trapped already. So then the Mishnah continues to say that even if the first fellow picks himself up and he walks away, and now it turns out that my continuing to sit there is continuing to keep the animal trapped. If I walk away, the animal will be able to run loose. So my continuing to sit there constitutes the continuing trapping of the animal. That's permissible. He didn't do anything wrong. Why? Because at the time that he sat down, the animal was trapped already, so he's not doing anything. So the Mishnah wants to emphasize the permissibility of my continuing to sit there blocking the door. The whole reason why I continue to stay there is on purpose, to continue to keep the animal trapped. And still it's permissible. The Mishnah says, that's okay, there's no problem. Hola ma zeh doma, what is this to be compared to? The no'el es beso, a person locks the door in the morning, he goes to shul, he opens the door, he walks out, he locks the door, and then later on, v'nimtzo, and it turns out tzvi, shomur betocho. It turns out that there was a wild animal that got trapped because of the fact that he locked the door. So what do you mean a wild animal got trapped? He wasn't aware of it at the time. So there, what's the case? Noel is beso, he locks the door that Ganovim shouldn't walk off with all of his possessions. And then it turns out that there was a wild animal trapped. So the Rashba on that Mishnah in the middle of Masechah Shabbos quotes a comment from the Talmud Yerushalmi. So what it means is, he sees a wild animal run into his house, and he wants to go to shul. And his main intention is to lock the door in order to protect his possessions. And his secondary intention is also to trap the animal. So since that's only a secondary intention, his main intention really is to lock the door to protect his property. So it's permissible l'chatchila to lock the door, even though you know that by locking the door you're trapping the animal, and you're intending for that. Even though it's a dovah hamiskavein, it's permissible. So the Ran, in his commentary on the Rif, quotes this from the Rashba, and he says, that's impossible. That cannot be. There cannot be such an interpretation of the Talmud Yerushalmi. If he intends explicitly to trap the animal, for sure it's forbidden. So the Ran gives a different interpretation. Okay, we'll have to continue a little later.
When he said it, I got scared.
The Mishnah in Masechah Shabbos But a person who locks the door to protect his home from ganavim, and it turns out that a wild animal was trapped. So the Rashba comments on that Mishnah based on a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi that even if I know at the time that I lock the door that the wild animal is now getting trapped and I'm intending for this is my explicit kavana, it's still permissible. Why? If my main intention is to protect my possessions and the trapping of the animal is only a secondary intention, so this is permissible. So the Ran, in his commentary on the Rif, quotes this Rashba, and he says, this cannot be what the Yerushalmi is saying. That's impossible, that's ridiculous. The person is locking his door, closing the door with a double intention. The main intention is to protect his home, and the secondary intention is to trap an animal, and that's permissible. He's trapping an animal, and it's a violation of tzedah. So the Ran says that's out of the question. Then the Ran says, and even if he doesn't intend at all, even if he's not interested at all in trapping the animal, if he's aware of the fact that by closing the door he is trapping an animal, even if he's not interested in it, that would constitute a psik reshe. I know for sure that by closing the door I'm violating tzedah, I'm trapping an animal. So even if you're not interested, that should be a psik reshe de la nichale. It still should not be allowed. So the Ran interprets the Mishnah that the Mishnah is simply meant to say if a person locks his house intending to protect his possessions and he didn't realize at all that an animal was trapped, and later on he finds out that by closing the door he had trapped an animal, he's not obligated to bring a korban chatos after Shabbos, even though he did a malacha b'shogeg. And normally, whoever does a malacha b'shogeg has to bring a korban chatos. This is considered misasek. Since he wasn't even aware of the fact that he's trapping a wild animal, this is misasek and it's permissible. So we have the two extreme opinions. The Rashba on the one extreme thinks that even if you have explicitly in mind to trap the animal, if it's only a secondary intention, if my main intention is to protect my property, I'm locking the door, ganavim should walk off with my furniture. And my secondary intention is to trap the animal. Even in that case, it's mutter, it's permissible. The Ran has the opposite extreme, and he says, even if you're not interested at all in trapping the animal, if you are aware of the fact that there is a wild animal in the house and that by closing the door you're trapping the animal, even if you couldn't care less, that's a psik reshe and you're not allowed to do it. And many poskim halacha lamaisa accept a middle of the road position. On the side of the Rif we usually have printed the commentary that's called Shilti HaGiborim. So the Shilti HaGiborim suggest a compromise between the Rashba and the Ran. So his position is, and this is accepted by the Shuas Yankif and the Avnei Nezer and several other major Achrayim from the last 250 years. So they all say like this: if you're closing the door intending explicitly to trap the animal, even though it's only a secondary intention, then we don't accept the Rashba's leniency. You're not allowed to do that. But if your intention, your sole intention in closing the door is to protect your property, you really couldn't care less about trapping the animal. But you know that an animal is getting trapped, so although normally we would have declared that as a psik reshe, here, for some reason or another, this is not considered a psik reshe. So it's mutter. So what's the reason or the other? Why is it not considered a psik reshe? So the Shilti Giborim himself, who was the first one to suggest this compromise, the middle position between the two extremes, between the Rashba, who's very mekel, and the Ran, who's very machmer, Shilti Giborim himself gives a different explanation that's not really too satisfactory. And these Gedolei Achrayim, the Shuas Yankif, and the Avnei Nezer, and Rabbi Chana Wasserman, and several others, Paskin like to compromise, but not for the reason. Hilchasek Yeshil Tegibam Relav Mitaimei. They don't accept his reason. They all say the following explanation. When is there a din of Psik Reishei? If I'm handling something, Biodayim, I'm holding on to something and I'm doing an activity. I'm doing a Pu'ula Hamuteris. I'm doing an activity that's permissible. But it's a Psik Reishei, it's a certainty that by doing the Pu'ula Hamuteris, it'll turn out that I did a malacha also biyadayim. But here, I'm closing the door. So closing the door to protect my property is a pula hamuteres. By closing the door, if there is there happens to be a wild animal that got trapped now. So trapping an animal is usa. So if I trap an animal biyadayim, I catch the animal in a net and I wrap the net around the wild animal. That's tzeita biyadayim. If I close the doors and the windows and thereby I trap a wild deer, I trap a wild animal, nimtza tzvi, shamur betocho, a wild animal is caught in the house, the activity of closing the door relates to the animal if I'm interested in it. If my intention in closing the door is in order to trap the animal, then closing the door constitutes a malacha of tzeda, that you're not allowed to. But I couldn't care less over here. I'm closing the door. Biyadayim, I'm closing the door. And the mele, the animal gets trapped. I'm not handling, I'm not touching the animal. So that's what these Gedolei Achrayim come with this compromise, Shita, that if I do a pu'ula, which is mutar on Shabbos, and the mele malacha occurs on a different item, which I didn't even handle at all, so that's not labeled as a psik reishei. So this is what the recent poskim all write with respect to walking in the street. They caught the Times Square bomber by videos. Lemaisa, whenever you walk in the street now on Shabbos, you're being videoed. Whether you're walking on Times Square, you're walking in front of a store, you're being videoed. So there's really an iser of ksiva on Shabbos. Ksiva is not only if you write letters, if you write numbers, also ksiva. What if I draw a picture? Also ksiva, the Rambam writes. If you make a tzura, it's also ksiva. When the women give birth to the babies in the hospital on Shabbos, and in order not to mix up the babies, so the nurse in the hospital takes the mother's thumb and she makes an imprint, she takes the baby's foot and makes a footprint. So if the nurse is a not Jewish nurse, let her do whatever she wants with the baby, but the oledus is not allowed to push her finger down to make an imprint. That's what the poskim in Europe said. In Europe they would sometimes insist, the police would sometimes insist that they want your fingerprints on Shabbos. So the poskim point out, you're not allowed to make a fingerprint on Shabbos. You're making a picture, making a unique picture. No one else has the same fingerprint that I have. So you're not allowed to make a picture on Shabbos. So how do you stand in front of a mirror? The answer is no. You stand in front of a mirror, you're not making a picture. That's just a reflection. But if I stand over here, and then my image appears on a TV screen somewhere, on a video screen, that's not a reflection. That's really ksiva. By walking in the street in front of the video camera, I cause my image to appear on the screen. So that's in a certain sense a malach of kosev. It's ksav shena shel kayama. It's not going to last so long. I'm going to walk away so my image will disappear. And even if it's recorded on the video, probably will be erased within 24 hours or automatically erased within 48 hours, whatever. So it may be that it's only midirabanan, because it's ksav shena shel kayama. Chacham Avadya Yosef wants to say that it's only ksivim midirabanan based on a passage in the Talmud Yerushalmi about kosei beraglo. Kosei beraglo is not a malacha deraisa. The pasha pshat means if you put a pen in between your toes and you write like that, like if a person is a righty and he writes with his left hand, that's ksiva kalacha yad. So that's ayidei shinoi, that's only an issa derabbanan. If you're ambidextrous, if you can write equally with the right hand and the left hand, then ksiva with the right hand, ksiva with the left hand is both ksiva kedarka. But a normal person who's a righty writes with the left hand, or he puts a pen in between his toes and he writes like that, that's kalach yad. So this is very questionable. Chacham Avadya's chap, he says, when you walk in the street in front of a video camera and your image appears on the screen, on the video screen, he calls that kosher beraglo. Pashat pshat, it's not kosher beraglo. Others dispute his assumption. That's not kalach hayad. That's the normal way to do it. You walk in the street on your feet. Well, you should walk on your hands. Kosher biyodov. You walk in the street on your feet, and your image appears on the video screen. That's not a shinoi. That's not kalach hayad. Whatever. But it is an issue of ksiva. So the question is, no one should be allowed to walk anywhere in a city where he knows that he's being videoed. So that makes it impossible to walk in all normal cities. Maybe over here there's no videos, but in New York, in all the neighborhoods, there are videos. So the Paskim say that we really rely on this kula. Lechatchila, we should really try to be machmer like the Ran. The Ran says that by closing the door and you're trapping the animal, even though you're not handling the animal, the Ran thinks that it is a psik reisha. So lechatchila, we should really treat it as a psik reisha. If you can avoid it, you shouldn't walk near the video. You shouldn't walk in a location where you know that the lights are going to go on. A lot of people have sensors in front of their homes, so if you walk close enough to the house, the lights in this house go on. So lechatchila, we treat it as a psik reisha. But if you have a shas hadchak, so we follow the Ikar HaDin. Ikar HaDin is the way all these Gedolei Achrayim say that we accept the compromise of the Shilta Gibborim. But for the following reason, it's not considered a psik reisha if I'm not handling the item where the melacha is occurring. If I'm not handling the animal that gets caught here, I'm not handling the light. There's a sensor system over here. So by my walking on the floor, this causes the light to go on. So that's not considered a psik reisha. That's not considered a psik reisha. So if it's dark in the hallway and you won't be able to see where to put the key into the keyhole, so that's not a dova. That's not a psik reisha. That's a dova hamiskave. I want the light to go on in order that I should see how to put the key into the keyhole. But if there's enough light in the hallway that I can open the door anyway, if the light goes on, it'll even be a little more light. But I really don't need that light, and I'm not interested in the light. So then we assume that that's not called a psik reisha. That's why we're lenient. If you have no choice, so we're lenient on that. We don't really consider that a psik reisha. A psik reisha v'lo nichale is a major dispute among the Rishonim. The Oruch, who lived in Rome, who wrote his dictionary, the first, that's what Rav David mentioned a couple of days ago, the Oruch was the first one to write a dictionary of Talmudic words. So the Oruch has this chiddush that a psik reisha d'lo nichale, if I couldn't care less, is permissible. But many the Balei HaTosfos are not happy with that opinion, and that's a question how we paskin. So here the paskin say, no, this is better than psik reisha d'lo nichale. This is not even considered a psik reisha. That's why people go daven by the Kosel HaMaravi on Shabbos. By the Kosel HaMaravi, everything is videoed for security purposes. When you walk in the streets there, in the shuk, wherever you walk in the Iratika, everything is being videoed. And the army is watching everything to make sure that our cousins don't riot there. So everybody's being videoed. So it's always a psik reisha. So the cool is that we don't consider that a psik reisha. Because I'm doing a pulu hamutera, I'm walking over here minding my own business. And mimele, my image appears on a screen somewhere. And I'm not doing it biyadayim. It happens memela. So we mikra din we make all that. If you can avoid it, you should. But mikra din we pass kol halacha that that's not considered a psik reisha.
Ready?
Far in the end of Erbin,
walking on grass.
That sometimes it'll be a psik reisha that you're going to rip out the grass. So then it'll still be a psik reisha de lo nichale, if I couldn't care less. So then it'll depend, according to the Oruch, it'll be permissible. going to boast, it'll be prohibited. And usually it's not a psik reish, usually it's a dov she'eino miskaven. By walking on gris, it may or may not rip out some of the gris. So if it may or may not, if I'm doing a pula hamuteris walking in such a way that it may or may not rip out some of the gris, which is a malach of kotzer, so that's dov she'eino miskaven is mutter. That's not a problem. And if it will be a vadoi, is that it's going to rip out grass, because the grass is very tall and I'm wearing very sharp boots and it just rained and everything is in a state that's probably going to get ripped off. That's a psik reshe. So then it's a psik reshe lo nichle. I couldn't really care less. But then it'll be the machlekes, the oruch, and everybody else. Rabbi mentioned to me that I should tell everyone that bread was baked on Schlesinger baking tins. So Sfardim consider that what we call nat bar nat. Noisen tam bar noisen tam de atera. So whoever is a Sfardi is permitted to eat the sandwich together with milk and cheese. But for Ashkenazim, he said, for Ashkenazim, we shouldn't have milk with it. You can eat it, you can eat it, and then have your milk a minute later. But you're not supposed to have it together. Enjoy your dinner.
Everybody needs to get off the bus now.
Here we go.